What's the difference between possessed and haunted?
A haunted house is a house with ghosts in it, the spirits of people who died. But the spirits of people living in a house possessed have never existed in human form. They've only existed in spirit form. They're pure evil.
You're listening to Land of the Creeps.
Welcome to Land of the Creeps. I'm your host, Greg Amortis, where we're keeping horror alive one movie at a time, one review at a time. You're listening to episode 162. I do want to apologize for not having our Italian horror episode last week, but schedule conflict. I was tempting to do it by myself, but I decided to hold back and just wait a week and come out with our regular episodes. And I'm kind of glad we did, but anyways, tonight we're going back to our 1970s episode, and tonight we're in the year of 1971, and we're going to be knocking this thing out, doing a couple of reviews, plus naming off some movies that came out in 1971. Had such a great time on the previous episode where we did 1970. So really digging the 70s, man, and I hope you listeners are as well. So without further ado, man, let's welcome in our host tonight, and he's from the PA area, man. It's my buddy. It's my encyclopedia of knowledge, Mr. DVD Infatuation, horror movie podcast man himself, Dr. Shock.
Hey, Greg, how you doing today?
I am doing good. We're recording. It's actually Sunday, and right. March 19th, And I'm excited, man. I got the tweet from the Horror Movie Podcast that your heavy metal episode come out that I had a brief little voicemail on, and I've been listening to it today, and great job by yourself, Wolfman Josh, and, of course, Jay, and Chris Robo, and, God, the other guy's slipping my mind.
Yeah, we had it was like a whole bunch of us on that episode. But great, and it was great. Thank you. Yeah, and it was fun to do it because I can't say I'm really – wasn't one of my strong suits. I wasn't up on that, but I got to see, Deathgasm, which I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. But even more so is the new movie. You know,
Devil's
Josh
Candy.
Sort of secured us a screener, the Devil's Candy, and wow, I really do recommend that one. It's brand new. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's out now.
Yes, from what I've not searched it, but it was, according to Wolfman, was supposed to be out which would have been on St. Patrick's Day. So I got to go online and see if it's available. I'm sure it is on like Amazon or Vudu or something.
Right. So yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. It really is. Very well done.
That's awesome. I'm all about heavy metal, man, music like that. So I'm definitely going to check out. I actually have not watched Deathgasm yet either. It's on my queue. So
you know what? Think Dead Alive with heavy metal music.
Nice.
That is the level it's pitched at. That's the level the gore is at. So that's what it's kind of what you're going to get. I really, as I was watching it, I really got a Dead Alive vibe from it.
Okay.
First off, it is set in New Zealand too, I think. So that helped it. But that's what I really thought of. As I was watching the movie, I said, man, it really just feels like Dead Alive, which is a great movie.
How unique is it? How great is it? Like, you know, with last year's breakout hit, The Green Room, you know, concentrating on the punk rock era, and now you got Deathgasm and these other movies now with, like you're saying, Devil's Candy, man. It's pretty cool that music's really taking a limelight, man. I love it.
I agree. I agree. And it's not just treating the characters, you know, like it's not just looking at it like, okay, well, the music is the music is demonic, mm-hmm. you know, play it backwards and all this other stuff. You know, it's not doing that. We're getting like real characters in these movies.
Yes.
Maybe not Deathgasm. Everyone's a little bit exaggerated in Deathgasm, but you know, like in The Devil's Candy, you're getting real characters.
Nice.
And they just happen to like heavy metal music.
See, and I love that, man. And one of the movies that really stood out to me for score because of the way they revolved it in the movie was the movie The Gate that I absolutely love. But I still today remember in that movie where he's, you know, the neighbor, his buddy, you know, friend has got the album and they're playing it backwards and all kinds of shit. I just remember, and that was such a timepiece.
It was a thing.
Yes.
It wasn't. And it was, you know what? Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was funny because I remember listening to Howard Stern years ago when he was only on in Philly and New York.
Right.
And I remember listening, and he got these albums where they say you play it backwards, this is what you hear. And he wasn't buying any of it. He wasn't really sure if he bought any of it.
Uh-huh.
But he played Stairway to Heaven backwards, and yeah, you hear it. you hear it plain as day. And there was another one where it's plain as day. Every single other one, I mean, one of them was like a Springsteen song or something.
Right.
And you played them backwards, and they didn't sound like anything.
Linda Ronstadt or something.
Yeah, like it was just all these things that say, you know, like, okay, you play it, play it backwards, and you didn't hear anything, but definitely in Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You play the Carpenters Close to You. Why do birds suddenly appear? And yeah. Then you play that backwards and you hear, I'm taking your soul.
Yeah, right.
I'm kidding, listeners. I don't know.
Or Air Supply.
Oh, yeah.
Air Supply will turn out to be like demonic or something.
Love it. It's so weird, man, the music. I mean, you know, the old wise tale of country music, play it backwards, you get your wife, your dog, and your home back. But, you know, it's just, I love music so much. And yeah. Oh, my God, all genres but country I love. And I'm mm-hmm. glad that you guys concentrated a whole episode. So, listeners, definitely, I'll put a link up. But definitely go over to Horror Movie Podcast and listen to their newest episode, episode 113. And check out that great episode of heavy metal music in movies. And it was just a great show. And plus, they had the director from Devil Candy on, and also Ethan Embry, star of Devil Candy, on there as well. So great, great, great show. And something for you to check out. But we're going from heavy metal, Doc, like metal bleed your face off movies. We're going to the 1970s where everything was kind of chill and free love.
Yeah.
I was doing some house cleaning today, and this has nothing really horror related here, listeners, so bear with me for 2 seconds and I'll bring it back in. But I was sitting at the house. I was doing my house chores today, you know, doing my manly duty, being I'm by myself now. And I sat and I decided to go on my TV. I was like, man, I'm going to put it on one of the music channels. And what do I go to? I go to the 70s, baby. And I'm listening to shit like, you know, CCR and some stuff that, man. And if you don't know who that is, it's Creedence Clearwater Revival. Hello. And one of my all-time favorite bands. And, man, it's just music after music, man, was like war. Good God.
There really is. I had the whole Time Life series, Sounds of the 70s.
Ooh, yes.
On CD,
mm-hmm.
which was great. I mean, it really was. I mean, they even had, like, you got a little bit later, I had Welcome Back by John Sebastian, you know, for the theme from Welcome Back Hotter.
Yes.
You know, there really was a lot of, I mean, I'm a big fan of The Who.
Yeah.
And I think The Who did, I'm pretty sure that Who's Next, which I think is their all-time best. I mean, Tommy's great, too. I think Tommy's up there. But I think Who's Next is their best album. I'm sure that's a 70s album.
Oh, yeah.
Just so many, even Pink Floyd, The Wall, my all-time favorite. That was late 70s.
Yeah.
So there was really, really great, really a lot of great music in the 70s.
There was a lot of big bands, because even when you get into, I'm a huge Fleetwood Mac fan.
And yes, Rumors came out that time.
Yes, and the Eagles and just different mm-hmm. ones. Man, there was some really, really outstanding music from the 70s. And everything was really uplifting in the 70s. It was, like I said, about that free love, and it was the hippies. Uh-huh. It was the bell bottoms. It was, you know, that era. And it was weird because after listening to, you know, a couple hours of the 70s, I went out and done a few things, come back, and I cut it on to the 80s. And you could tell the time shift from the 70s into the 80s music, where everything was a little bit more techno and, and a little bit more of that kind of era. And I was like, wow, you could tell a huge difference in a
You
decade.
Really can. You really can. And it's funny because I grew up with the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
What's really funny is I never, radio-wise, like, I was a kid at the time, so I was always, you know, in my parents' car. And my father always had the technology way ahead of everyone else. So in 1981, he had a tape deck in his car. Now, I mean, nowadays they come standard. I think he paid like $800 or something to get this damn tape deck in there. But, you know, that's what you pay whenever you're, like, getting the technology early.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, he got all of these cassettes of 50s music. So basically, my childhood, I drove around in Christine because I heard nothing but 50s music. like that was my childhood music for a long time until MTV came along.
Yeah.
Then when MTV came along, then I started to say, okay, now this is, you know, my era of music and whatever. And then from there, it just sort of ballooned out, and I had all these albums from the 70s. I really did. I think if I were to look at all of my albums, yeah, I had a lot of 80s stuff, but I think I had even more 70s stuff. Kiss was big. I mean, I was always big into Kiss, even back in the, you know, when they were first releasing those albums. We couldn't wait for the albums to come out, even the disco one that they did.
Oh yeah, Dynasty.
I ended up getting. I mean, there was just something about them, you know. Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Yeah, because Kiss was one of those when you went, say, Destroyer, for instance, or even Love Gun, and then you went into Dynasty. It was like a complete shift change of music, but it worked, man. But one of my all-time favorite soundtracks, and this is going to strike people probably a little odd for me, but one of my favorite soundtracks is Eddie and the Cruisers, man. Such a great movie. Yeah. But the score made that movie so good with songs like Tender Years and On the Dark Side. And, my God, and Wild Summer Nights.
Big hit. On the Dark Side was a big hit back
then. Yes. So, I mean, and here we are talking music. Go listen to episode 113 of Horror Movie Podcast to hear all about it. I mean, I could talk music all night long, but yeah. Eddie and the Cruisers, man, such a great movie, such a great soundtrack. But but we're into 1970s, listeners. We're doing the year 1971. And if you did listen to our episode about 1970, you'll have a feel of kind of what we did, basically. We've done a list of some movies that came out, and just a brief synopsis or just a little mention of, and we'll do that again in 1971. But our feature reviews for tonight will be 1971's Vincent Price's The Abominable Dr. Fibes, I should say. And then also 1971's Simon, King of the Witches, which I had never heard of, so I was, you know, excited to watch that one. We'll let you know what we thought about it. But anyways, that's our feature reviews, but we will do a list, and I think without further ado, we'll just kind of kick it off, Doc, and name a few off. A lot of, you know, like right now I'm on Wikipedia, and they do it in alphabetical order because they're awesome like that. And,
I'm on that same page.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool. I'm not going to read off every single movie, listeners, because there is probably, Doc, I would say, a good 30, 40 movies, probably more than that. But definitely a few. There's one that I have in particular that I've not watched in years, and I think it's a Rare Flix released of as Beast of the Yellow Night, directed by Eddie Romero.
Ooh.
And that's one that I definitely want to check back out again because I haven't watched it in a long, long time, and definitely want to check that one out. But what you got, Doc, for 71?
I'm looking at all these things. There's so many of them okay, just throw one out there. I'll throw there's a movie called Burke and Hare. Ooh. Okay, this was it's a British movie, and it's about, you know, the grave robbers. They've made a few movies about these guys. They had one recently, as a matter of fact, that Simon Pegg was in, if I'm not mistaken. But this one is an interesting one. It has this very strong theme at the beginning, like Burke and Hare. I don't even remember how it goes, but it was rattling around in my head for days after I saw this movie. Yeah, but it's got some comedy in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got this this one actress, I can't remember her name, but I know she was in Jean Roland movie. Man, she's like
stunning,
great, and she was in this movie. So it's light horror.
Yeah,
it really is. It's not heavy horror. It's light horror. There is some comedy in it, but I enjoyed it. It's a fun movie.
Nice. One of my all time favorite Italian giallo films came out in 1971, and that was Paolo Cavara's The Black Belly of the Tarantula.
Right.
Holy shizow! Go back. We've reviewed this recently, listeners, but man, if you have never seen The Black Belly of the Tarantula, man, Barbara Boucher, holy shizow. She absolutely stunning, but that movie is amazing, and could not recommend that enough, man. But yeah, that was 1971.
Nice. There's a lot of giallos. This was kind of the time when they were, I mean, we had a few in 70 also.
Yes.
This is one that was sort of, I'm going to skip around a little bit here because I saw one down here. And this is one I almost wanted to do as a feature review, and it's I Drink Your Blood.
Yes. We almost did that one, listeners. Yeah. We really did. It was on the list.
Mm-hmm. And, wow, I mean, was this the movie? I think this was the movie that, what's her name, showed over in England when she was trying to sort of decry violence.
Mm-hmm.
When they were coming up with the video Nasties. I can't remember the woman's name who sort of spearheaded that. But this is the movie she showed as an example of why they needed to do this. And it is, man. Just the whole idea of it. I mean, it turns my stomach just thinking of this kid putting this dog's blood with rabies, just injecting it into these meat pies that people are going to be eating. You know,
it's like crazy.
It is. It's really is very good. And when these people get, you know, of course they didn't control it. He's trying to get back at this almost like this cult,
right?
And that's what he's trying to get back at. And this has real animal violence in it. I mean, there's a chicken. They kill that sucker. There's no special effects in this thing. That thing's dead. And there's a scene where they're cooking these rats, and those rats all look pretty real to me, too. I think somebody had said that all the animals were real in this. So,
wow.
If that turns you off, then that's something to just keep in mind. But other than that, I would definitely recommend this movie.
Sweet. Another one, too. This is obviously another Giallo film, but Dario Argento's The Cat of Nine Tails. Uh-huh. We'll be doing that one in our Argento series once it starts up. And, man, it's a great movie. like a lot of those, Doc. Like, you know, not just The Cat of Nine Tails and The Belly of the Black Belly of the Tarantula, but there was like several in 70, 71, 72, 73. It seemed like those first three or four years, they were really, really hitting their stride with those.
Definitely.
And just great movies, man.
Absolutely. All right. Here's one that I remember watching on UHF it would have been the late 70s because it was on the Dr. Shock Show. And he showed this thing. And that's where I first saw it, and it is The Incredible Two-Headed Transplant.
Nice.
A science fiction horror film. It's got Bruce Dern in it. It's got Casey Kasem in it. Pat Priest, who was Marilyn in The Munsters, was in this. And the whole idea is, you know, you've got this criminal, and they put his head on a simpleton. You know, they sort of graft his head onto the simpleton. He learns how to take control of the body. And the simpleton's like this huge guy. Mm. And they just, I remember a scene specifically of him strangling someone. And, you know, like the big guy's almost like crying because he doesn't want to do it, but he doesn't have the brain power to stop the criminal from taking over his body and doing it. there were a couple of these movies around this time. There was also one I know that had Ray Milland and Rosie Grier in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a very unusual one, and I can't remember what that one's called now off the top of my head. I'm sure people out there are screaming it at the
right. That's that one.
Yeah, I can't remember, but I even reviewed that one too on the blog way back when. I mean, in the first year, and I did review this one as well. But now there's just something about this, you know, because it's cheesy, but it's just it's cool too. You know, it's just. And it's sort of nostalgic for me.
Nice. Hey, it's all about nostalgia. I'm going to name off a few movies right here by two different directors, and I love these guys. And Doc, we have talked about one of the directors, and a lot of his movies are slow burn movies and weird and whatnot, but they were really notorious for almost the exploitative style films. But Gene Rollin and Jess Franco had some movies come out this year.
Oh, yeah.
One of them in particular, Gene Rollin's Caged Virgins, which may possibly, I'm thinking that's in the Full Moon series. If not, I'm sure you can get it on the Redemption label.
It's also called Requiem for a Vampire.
Yes.
And it is on the Redemption. I'm pretty sure it's on Redemption because I think I have it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll have to do a review of it and let you know fully what I thought about it. Jess Franco's She Killed in Ecstasy. Another Gene Rollin film called The Shiver of the Vampires, which, wow.
That one's actually, I like that one.
Yes.
I did see that one. And His moves are very slow burn sometimes. Mm-hmm. But they have such a feeling of place because he always shoots in a different location.
Right.
And he really does make great use of it when he goes to these locations. And the way he... Just the way that they're paced. Yes, they're slow. But there is something when it's a good one, there's something sort of hypnotic about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. And the last one by Jess Franco or Jesus Franco, they listed on here. But Jess Franco is Vampiros Lesbos. And I love that fucking movie.
That's one of his most popular ones.
Yes, dude. Stunningly beautiful naked women everywhere. And just I love that movie, Doc, so much. For multiple reasons.
Right.
Woo! What else you got there, Doc, for 71?
Let me see. I just had some. Oh, one I think that's worth mentioning. Another one we almost feature reviews is Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
Yes. Yes, Kevin O'Connor.
Yep.
Wow. Yep.
And it's one that's very interesting because it's the idea that, Jessica has just come out of a mental hospital. She had a breakdown, and she's like sort of up. She's high, like sort of really enjoys. They're moving to a new place out in the country. Well, she starts seeing things and wonders, are they real? Am I imagining this? Is this, you know, is this, am I losing my mind again? Now it turns out that they moved to this town that there is a legend of a vampire there. And a female vampire, and it turns out that the house they're living in is the center of it all. So it's very interesting. It's very well done.
Yes, I will totally agree, and we'll have to do a review on it sometime in the future, man, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Murders in the Rue Morgue, which was a Gordon Hessler film, was one that came out. Another one I wanted to briefly mention, too, was The Mad Butcher by Guido Zerli. Ooh, I love that movie. It's a weird one. That's weird. What you got there, Doc? I see one called Lake of Dracula. Have you ever heard of that one? That's from Japan.
I can't say that I have. Interesting.
Micho Yamamoto.
Yamamoto, yeah. No, I've not heard of that one. Interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm seeing a couple Al Adamson movies that came out this year. We have Brain of Blood.
Okay. I haven't seen that one.
I know I've reviewed that one, and I'll be honest, I don't remember a lot about it. It was for the blog I did a while ago. Another one I did for the blog I remember a little bit better, but not fondly, is Dracula versus Frankenstein.
Nice.
Not that it's
a great movie.
It's just not that it's terrible. No, it's terrible. But it's like one of those kind of so bad it's good type of movies. Al Adamson did a few of them, and he did some straight up decent movies too, like Satan's Sadist and whatnot, but... Dracula versus Frankenstein. It's just a very, very different Dracula, very, very different Frankenstein. Now, it does have J. Carroll Nash in it,
mm-hmm.
Who had been, you know, in a lot of older, black and white horror movies, and Lon Chaney Jr. makes an appearance in this film as well. I don't believe he talks. I think he plays a mute in that. It's really, really... very, very low budget. I mean, all of Al Adamson's movies were, but this thing is like micro budget.
Nice.
So it's, something like, I can't come out and say, definitely check it out. Because it's not that kind of movie. And people could send hate mail if I straight up recommend go see Dracula versus Frankenstein. But... it's not, it could be fun too. Watch with a bunch of friends. You could have a good time with it.
Nice. Do a few more here and then we'll go ahead and start our views. Couple that Curtis Harrington brought out in 1971. What's the Matter with Helen? And also whoever slew Annie Rue.
Whoever slew Annie Rue. So with Shelley Winters.
Yeah. Both of those are Shelley Winters. And actually What's the Matter with Helen actually had Debbie Reynolds in it as well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
I have that double feature from the Midnight Madness collection of those two movies.
Nice. You gotta love it, man. You got to.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I'll tell you what, Doc, let's just I know there's one in the W's you'll want to mention, Doc, and then we'll just do a quick rundown.
Yep, no problem. Okay, first I'll mention this one real quick. Yep. It's called Fright. Ooh. And it has Susan George in it. And I do remember seeing this one. It's about a babysitter. And she's looking after this kid. The parents had gone out, and all these things, like there's something trying to get into the house. It's when the child's biological father shows up. He escaped from a mental institution, and he's trying to break into the house, and she's doing everything she can. First, it got Susan George in it. It was, you know, amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Then it's also got Honor Blackman in it. Now, she's, in case anybody is not familiar, Honor Blackman played Pussy Galore in Goldfinger.
Nice. In oh, Bond Pussy movie. Galore.
Yeah.
You can't forget that name.
Right, exactly. No, definitely not. But this is, it's well done. I mean, it is a very tense movie. So that's one worth checking out. And you said in the W's here. Oh, I see a few. Yeah, Werewolves on Wheels.
Uh-huh. That's not the exact one, but I know you're getting to it.
Oh, yeah, I think, are you thinking Willard?
Yes.
Yeah, no. I don't know that I've seen the original Willard. I've seen the remake, which was interesting. You know, I mean, the Crispin Glover and Arlie Ermey remake, and it was good. I liked it. But I'd like to see the original. But yeah, Werewolves on Wheels. I saw that when I was down the shore. I took my DVD player down with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching it down there, and I'm like, what? This is crazy as hell. It's like, you know, definitely exploitation, but man, it was wild.
Nice. Yeah. So you're saying I need to watch it, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And also one of my favorite, Hammer films from this time period is Twins of Evil.
Twins of Evil, 1971,
with Peter Cushing. And that's definitely worth checking out too.
Absolutely. Here's another, just a few lists here. Beast of Blood. Black Noon. Some of these I've never heard of. Blood from the Mummy's Tomb, Bloodthirst, Brain of Blood, The Brotherhood of Satan, The Butcher of Benbrook, and I think that might be Israeli or something. Madrid. Then you got The Corpse Grinders. What, man, that sounds like a damn name for a band, the Corpse Grinders.
I actually have the Corpse Grinders, but I don't think I've ever seen it. I think I have that upstairs, and I don't think I have to check that out yet.
And we cannot go without mentioning this movie just because of the star Ingrid Pitt. If I don't go episode of the 70s without saying Ingrid Pitt, I have not done justice, and it's Countess Dracula.
Countess Dracula. Again, not one of my favorite Hammer films.
Nope.
But it's got Ingrid Pitt.
That's all it needs.
It's worth mentioning. You're right. Just for that. And let me see. I just saw one. Oh, Tomb of the Blind Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Tomb of the Blind Dead had come out in 1971, too. Part of that whole series.
Nice. Hands of the Ripper, The Headless Eyes, which is on the... I'm pretty sure that's in the Full Moon Collection. The House That Dripped Blood. Eye Monster, which was Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, Iguana with the Tongue of Fire. What a name. The Isle of the Snake People with Boris Karloff.
And I see here The Night Evelyn Came Out of the Grave.
Yes, and we just reviewed that recently. And
yes.
It's actually a really good movie. A lot of nudity in it. Really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Night of the Dark Shadows, The Night Digger, Night Hair Child. The Night God Screamed. I love these names. Octoman. Octoman reminds me, you know, of 1978's ultimate classic Halloween when Tommy Doyle's sitting there at the couch and Jamie Lee's, of course, babysitting. And she pulls out the comic books and she's like, what's this? Tarantula and Octoman. you got Queen Doll, Queens of Evil, Reflection of Fear. Oh, the sequel that we did of Count Yorga. You got the Return of Count Yorga.
Count Yorga. Look at that.
The Sadist with Red Teeth. Scream of the Demon Lover, which looks like it's some kind of Italian/Israelian or Turkish or something film. She Killed in Ecstasy, which I mentioned. Let's see. How about The Velvet Vampire, Venom, Web of the Spider, and we'll end it right there. That's some of the list.
And Velvet Vampire, I've seen. Again, it's a slow burn, but definitely an exploitation movie, too.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure that's in the Roger Corman collection.
So it's got some boobies in it for sure.
There's absolutely it does. Yes.
Nice. Well, then it's a win-win for us. But once again, tonight we're going to do our feature reviews. We'll be on the abominable Dr. Fives, Vincent Price, and then we'll also be doing Simon, King of the Witches. And I think without further ado, we'll go ahead and kick this thing off. And we're going to go first to the abominable Dr. Fives. We'll play the trailer, and I'll let Doc come back with the synopsis.
For a murder, or two, or three, or nine.
Who's this?
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet a dear friend.
Nine killed you. Nine shall die.
Your wife, no Fives. But you I will kill.
But you can't, Doctor. I am already dead.
Here, how are we going to get him off this? You take his head, and I'll take his feet. Let's unscrew him.
Dr. Fives, who samples the finer things of life. In his own inimitable way. And experiments with fascinating instruments of death.
The what, sir?
The Qatar. The 10 curses visited upon the pharaohs before Exodus.
Nine shall die. Nine eternities in doom.
Curse of boils, of bats.
Frogs?
Frogs, yes. And curse of blood.
Curse of hail in the bloody middle of nowhere.
Are you ready for Dr. Fives?
Probably the most terrifying motion picture you'll ever see.
All right, Doc, take it away, brother.
All right, The Abominable Dr. Fives. It's about a musician who's driven mad when his beloved wife, Victoria, and of course it's Dr. Fives we're talking about, and it's Carolyn Monroe in an uncredited role playing Victoria, died on the operating table. And so what he does is Fives loses his mind and he sets out to kill the doctors that or the people he holds responsible for his wife's death. And it was a team of nine, like surgeons and nurses, took part in the operation. They tried to save Victoria's life, but Fives, he's also a theology scholar, comes up with the nine plagues of Egypt as what he's going to use to get his revenge on each of these people. And he has help from a assistant, Volnavia. And what he does is he finishes these doctors off one by one. And it's sometimes in pretty, you know, it's pretty nasty what he gets down and does with to them. But there are people looking into it. You know, there is a Inspector Trout. He's looking into the murders. And, you know, as the bodies continue to pile up, he's saying, hey, these things are connected somehow. They seem a little random at first, but it's like, wait a second, there's something connecting all of these deaths. They bring Dr. Vesalius into it, played by Joseph Cotton. He was the lead surgeon during Victoria's operation. See, what it is for a long time, people thought Fives himself was dead.
Mm-hmm.
So for a while, he's not even a suspect in this.
Right.
But then eventually people are like, hey, maybe he's not, because it's starting to look as if he's the one at the heart of all of this, and it turns out that he is.
Absolutely. First initial reaction to this movie, and I've seen this one, of course, before. Very theatrical, of course, with all Vincent Price movies, you're going to get that.
Yes.
And beautiful, beautiful movie, man. I think the score is absolutely stunning with the pipe organs and the different things going on. And it's just a beautiful shot film. It looks pretty. It sounds pretty. And it's lackluster on gore and everything, obviously. You know, most of Vincent Price's films were. But this is not the type of film you went in looking for gore. And I thoroughly enjoyed this one. IMDb gives it a 7.2, and I'll let you know my rating later on. But my first initial thoughts, Doc, is this is a really, really great film.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. It's one of my top Vincent Price films. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because you never see his mouth move in this.
How weird is that?
You know, he's talking through a phonograph,
mm-hmm.
which is very unusual. But yeah, you never see his mouth move. But it's still one of my favorite. I mean, House on Haunted Hill is always going to be my favorite Vincent Price performance, I think. But this would be in the top five, maybe top three.
Yeah,
I would put this performance in this movie, and it is. And again, he's very over the top, but he does it so well. You know, there's something with Vincent Price where he can do that and go over the top and still make it seem very. I don't know about real, but you know, he just had a charisma where it worked, you know, and you're not really rolling your eyes at any of this because you're buying it because he's the one dishing it out, and it does go a long way.
Oh, I'll totally agree. And I've got to say, I agree with everything you said there. The director, Robert Fust,
something like this. Looks, that's how it's spelled anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to say Fust, F-U-E-S-T. Didn't have a ton of films under him, but he did do this one, and of course the sequel, Dr. Fives Rides Again, the following year, a film called The Devil's Reign, Aphrodite.
Oh, The Devil's Reign, the William Shatner / Ernest Borgnine / John Travolta movie.
Who can say that they directed a movie with three of the legends there, right? Wow.
I think it's John Travolta. It might be his first movie. I don't even think he talks in it. He just plays one of these guys in this cult. But it was just so weird to see him in this. I think it's pre-Welcome Back Kotter, even.
Oh, my God. That's way, way, way back.
Yeah.
Way back. But yeah, I got to say, man, I thought he'd done a really good job. There again, this film is theatrical in the sense that it's set up almost like a stage play, and I could totally have seen this movie being on stage with the sets and the different things going on. But there again, I loved it. This has that Hammer feel. Of the films it was set in.
It does.
That
That's a good
period.
Point. Mm-hmm. It really does. It has that sort of production value.
Yes.
Of a Hammer film.
And it worked. I mean, to me, it worked. The opening scene right away, man, with the creepy, you couldn't tell who it was at first, but, you know, cloaked guy playing organ and this weird, I don't know what you call them, gigantic dolls playing music. And
yes, like marionette-type things.
Exactly.
Yeah, not marionette, like wind-ups. Almost like wind-up thing, yeah.
Like the big toy soldiers.
Yes, exactly.
That would
be the best way to put it.
Very odd-looking, and just the music was really creepy, and seeing him come down cloaked in black and just weird, and then this beautiful woman coming out, you were like, what in the hell am I watching?
Right.
But it was... at the same time, eye-grabbing, you wanted to watch. And it just never let up, man, and I loved it. I thought the idea of Vincent Price's character not being able to speak worked. He basically would, like you said, you know, he hooked his thing up to the side of his neck, much like a Frankenstein monster
right,
kind of way.
Exactly.
And he was able to do his acoustic tones to come out in voice. That worked. And I thought the comedic side of it, there was a lot of comedic, not just right in your face, slap and knee joke telling, but the way the undertow of it made you laugh multiple times, or at least I did in this movie, because the inspectors were so funny.
Yeah, a lot of it was Price's reactions to these things. You know, what's happening, you know?
Absolutely.
And some of these things are kind of creepy. There's one involving bats.
Yes.
And that gets me, because I don't like bats. No, and sure. I understand they're good. And they eat the bugs and all that. I can't. We have a bat problem in our neighborhood here. And actually, on a radio, it was from real quick. Just a real quick story about bats, just because this is. I think this could kind of fit in with a horror podcast. Be honest with you. This was on the radio. It was reported on the radio. And that's where I heard it. That this woman, she lived in a place where there were a lot of bats. It's up in like the Allentown, Bethlehem area of Pennsylvania. There are lots of them.
Mm-hmm.
Even in our area, we get quite a few of them. Anyway, she had gotten one in the house, and she didn't think much of it because they'd gotten into her house before. So she was getting ready for bed, got everything ready for bed, got her coffee, set the timer on her coffee machine and everything. And she figured when she got up the next morning, the bat would be gone. It would somehow work its way out of the house. But she woke up the next morning, bat wasn't there, so she felt kind of good. She drank her coffee, climbed into the car, went to work. Came back later that day, bat's not there. Still going good. So she's going to, change the filter in her coffee to make, for the next day. Opens it up, and there's the bat in the coffee filter cooked.
What?
It got into her coffee filter, was cooked. So she drank the coffee that had gone through this bat.
Oh, my God. Rabies, possibly?
Well, that's what it is. He took it to the doctor. Because it had been cooked, they could not tell if it had rabies or not, so she had to undergo the treatments.
Oh, dude, I could not ever drink coffee again, which I don't, but I could never do it again.
Right, especially like if you're making one of those type of filters or whatever. I heard that and it freaked me out. It really freaked me out.
No. Can't do it. No bats.
No. I don't like them to begin with.
No.
And you hear that, and you're like, oh my God. It was, and I heard that on the radio. That was like reported on the radio.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's crazy. Freaky. Yeah, that's crazy. I did like that avenue of this movie, though, was the plague, like you said in your synopsis, where there was nine individuals that was, straightly. How would you put it?
They're part of the operation. Yeah. Yes. They were part of the operation trying to save her. And you kind of feel for these people because you get the feeling, hey, these people are doing their best here and it didn't work out. But,
right. But
Vincent Price is playing someone who's unhinged, and he's blaming them.
Yes. So you take those plagues, you got, like you said, the plague of the bats and the frogs and the, different things that went on, the locusts and the blood and, these doctors start individually being killed off fairly quickly. And the inspectors there, again, a lot of times the comedic side of the movie, are coming in trying to find out what's going on. And I love, especially, Inspector Harry Trout, played by Peter Jeffrey, man. I thought he was awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I thought he was really good too. And there are some comedic, like Terry Thomas, plays one of the doctors.
Dr. Longstreet.
Yes, with the blood. Yeah. Yes. And you know what? He's a funny guy. I mean, I remember him from It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. That's what I always think of when I see Terry Thomas, is that movie. But he's been in a lot of comedy. I mean, he was a comedic actor. And it was interesting to see him in a movie like this. Again, not so far off from comedy. But still, it's a little bit out of his wheelhouse.
Yeah, because the scene with him in particular is he has a film projector. And obviously, this is supposed to be set in the 30s, and they're not something relevant. And he's sitting here with this projector, and he has to constantly wind it to watch it. And it's like the old, almost like the Nudie Picks videos, where they're doing the whole dances and stuff. But it's this woman with a big, long snake. And you can tell he's, like, really enjoying it, getting off. Even though she's clothed, he's like, oh, and he's whining that thing. I guess you call her housekeeper or whatever, the woman that kind of tended over him, comes walking up behind the screen and kind of catches him off guard. And he kind of is so surprised, and she asks what it is. And he says, oh, it's this new thing. It helps keep out the draft. It's just so funny. And then what happens to him is just really cool and creepy. And I don't know, man. I just had so much fun with this movie. I thought the acting was so great. And it is the theatrical acting. So, you know, this is a totally different. Your horror hounds are probably not going to dig this movie, but.
Exactly. This is not a real. There's no realism.
No.
Going on here. This is all like horror. I guess fantastical.
Yeah.
You know, it's and that's what it's pitched at from start to finish. One interesting thing I remember reading about this is Vincent Price. He would always memorize the script.
Right.
I mean, he didn't know just his lines. He knew everybody's lines. Now there's a scene. Joseph Cotten. This is a little late in his career, and he was having some trouble with his lines. He kept forgetting them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he got a little, you know, PO because there's Vincent Price. He doesn't have to read his line. He doesn't have to memorize his lines because he was reading them. You know, all of his
pre-recorded
audio was recorded in post when everything was done or whatever, pre-recorded. Exactly. So Joseph Cotten made kind of a snide remark about Price. Like, hey, he doesn't have to go through this. He doesn't have to go. But Vincent Price would look at it and goes, yes, Joseph, but I do know all the lines.
And I know he did, no doubt.
Right.
That would shut you up pretty quick, right?
Right, yep.
Vincent Price, man, just such a classic character, actor, and altogether, just a creepy-looking dude. Like you said, he never opened his mouth in this movie, but just his mannerism and the stage presence that he carried over just he was able to do things without speaking that would just creep you out, man. And he was like a one of a kind actor, man. There was like few that could ever pull off what he did. I mean, you've got your Christopher Lees and you know, you could throw in your Peter Cushions, different people like that in that era. But Vincent was just a one of a kind actor, dude, that was such a A-lister. Everybody wanted Vincent in their movie.
Absolutely. And what's really cool about him is he extends back into the time of, like, the black and white.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was in movies in the 1930s and the 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not all of them were horror back then.
Right.
I mean, but you know, once House of Wax came and they said, wow, this thing's a big hit and this guy's great. And I know it's not his first horror movie. I know he had done some before that. But then from that point forward, that's a lot of what he started to do. And he was just so good at them in all the Poe movies that he did with Roger Corman. You know, that's him. If you look at all the actors out there who you think could bring, like, Poe to life, and it's Vincent Price is always at the top of the list for me anyway.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, hands down. And one of my favorite films by him was the fact that it was such a solo movie, you know, with just basically him was the last man on earth.
Oh, yeah, the last man on earth, right, yep.
That is like one of my all-time Vincent Price and one of my all-time favorite films.
Mm-hmm.
Such a great movie that just concentrated solely on one character that was basically due to zombie outbreak or whatever. I mean, he was left by himself, and he carried that fucking movie by himself.
Interestingly enough, in the original movie, they did, you know, they looked like zombies, but they were actually vampires.
Right.
That was what, I think Matheson had written that story. Richard Matheson had written that story. And they were vampires, but they did have a very zombie-esque
look,
sort of feel, except for they could talk. Yeah. And that was the thing that always got me. I remember seeing the Omega Man as a kid. And the things that always got me with him taunting him outside.
Yeah.
I mean, you get that even more intense in The Last Man on Earth because they're trying to break into the house. And this is like on the one floor. I mean, they're trying to break into Charlton Heston's too, but he's at least up. He's at least higher up. And he's got the generator going and everything. He feels a little more safe. But, man, in that Last Man on Earth, he's like right there. There's like hands sticking through his windows and they're calling out to him and everything. You know, it's pretty intense.
Nice. I just love that movie. So if you haven't seen it, definitely go back and watch it, man. Just such a great Vincent Price. I did want to mention some critical reception. They were saying on here, Christopher Knoll wrote of the film one of the 70s juiciest entries into the horror genre. Said the abominable Dr. Fives is Vincent Price at his campy best, a famous concert organist who is exacting revenge on the 9 doctors he blames for botching his wife's surgery, which ended her death. So through there, and this is interesting. So through a series of tortuous means that would make a Bond villain green with envy. I love that. The hideous vibes is matched by Joseph Cotten as the doc at the end of the road. A crazy script and an awesome score make this a true classic.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. But that is one of the really fun things. As good as Vincent Price is, and he is good. You know, and as just the, how with the sets and how colorful they are, and how very over the top everything is, very theatrical. Those kill scenes are what really stand out. That's what makes this movie so unique, is that all of these 9 different ways of doing people in.
Right.
You know, and just how sort of clever he gets with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the one in particular, there was one scene that I won't say exactly when or where or how it happened, but let's just say Brass Unicorn.
Oh, right.
The door opening, Brad. Oh, yeah. Just out of nowhere, it's like, bam! And you're like...
Right.
I mean, because it was a fairly tame movie, but that scene, although it was not that graphic, just the feeling of what had just happened was very eye-grabbing.
Yeah. It was like definitely.
That was that holy shit moment in the movie. That's when you knew that he was supernatural-esque in this movie, that no matter what you were doing or how careful you were with hiding people, he was still going to get you. It's crazy.
Exactly.
In early 2010s, Time Out conducted a poll with several authors, directors, authors, and critics who have worked within the horror genre to vote for their top horror films. Abominable Dr. Fives placed at number 83 on their top 100 list.
Nice.
And so, yeah, there's a few, and it was released. I do have this MGM Entertainment release, which is it's basically called the MGM Screen Legends Collection on DVD. I haven't got any of the Blu-rays yet. I just didn't have the money, but this one had the Tales of Terror, Twice Told Tales, Abominable Dr. Fives, Dr. Fives Rides Again, Theater of Blood, Madhouse, Witchfinder General, and the Vincent Price Collection Disc of Horrors. Really cool box set. Really cool box set.
Yeah, it is. I do have the Blu-rays. I do have all 3 of the Blu-ray sets for the Vincent Price Collection. And this is on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it looks awesome.
It's got to, because the DVD looks amazing. So I know the Blu-ray's got to be out of this world.
Yeah.
Just has to be. Let's look at
let's give a quick nod to the actress who played Volnavia, who I thought was very attractive, Virginia North.
She was not just attractive, but creepy as hell.
Yes, definitely. She didn't talk either.
No.
She just kind of walked around with him and just his assistant. I mean, she was gorgeous.
Yes.
She really was gorgeous. But you're right. She fit him perfectly. She was like the perfect assistant for him.
Yes, and if you go on her IMDb page, she passed away in 2004. But if you go on her IMDb page, they actually have a screen caption picture of her with the outfit with the axe in her hand. It's really creepy.
Wow.
Yeah, I've got to look her up. Not that I want to be creepy and be like a male, you know, kind of whoremongin kind of guy, but I would like to see if she was actually in anything I might want to know about, if you know what I mean.
Right.
She was in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. She was in Department S of TV.
She was one of those girls at the end in that, I guess, at the ski resort. They had this mountaintop. That was the Bond movie with George Lazenby. That was the one movie that was, you know, the back then that was not Roger Moore Sean Connery / Roger Moore. But they had this scene at the end, Terry Savalas, Blofeld, and he had all these women gathered around him. I guarantee she was probably one of them.
Probably.
Because they were all drop dead gorgeous.
Yeah, Some Girls Do, Robot Number 9, The Long Duel, and Deadlier Than Male. So yeah, I definitely got to look her up a little bit. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying, because she is stunningly beautiful. Wow.
Nice.
Blah, 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 blah. That's what I'd like to done with her. Blah, 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 blah. All right, get off that, Greg. User reviews on IMDb, I kind of like to do these sometimes. From 2005, Naughty Mari from Brazil had said, a masterpiece, calling this horror does not make it justice. I wouldn't call it a movie either, but film. It's pure art. The sets and art direction are incredible. The whole movie shows the aura of 1920s Art Deco, giving it that classy touch, and the script is also very original. And there's even room in it for lots of laughs, so... Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I ain't going no further. That right there just explained what I was feeling.
There you go. Yep.
I don't need to do anything else. Some of the taglines in this one was nine gruesome curses, which I thought was, I guess you could say that.
Yep.
But no, just a great film, Doc. I don't know anything negative I'd say about this one. Everything from start to finish just had me intrigued, man. I love this movie.
And look, and real, what are the other taglines? You see it on one of the posters here. Love means, and this is going back to Love Story,
mm-hmm.
where the big line was, love means never having to say you're sorry. Well, they do a take on this. Love means never having to say you're ugly.
Now that you just said that, I do want to bring this one scene up. Vincent Price, and you'll find this out fairly quickly, as a disfigured person. You can't really tell it, but you know it because of the makeup he's wearing.
Right.
Do you feel now the reveal moment was almost Phantom of the Opera-esque?
It was. It was Phantom of the Opera-esque, although I think he looks worse than any of the Phantoms, with the exception of Lon Chaney Sr.
Lon Chaney Sr. Do you feel like they should have showed that quicker or sooner, or do you think it was at the right moment, or was it lackluster to you when he revealed his face?
I don't think it had the effect they wanted. I'll agree with you, because in a movie like this, and that is he does have a very shocking appearance without that mask, it's not what stands out about the movie.
No.
And it probably should have. You know, that should have been a scene that you remember. I mean, if you look at the reveal, whenever you think of Phantom of the Opera, the Lon Chaney Sr. one, you think of pulling the mask off and him looking straight into the camera.
Mm-hmm.
That big reveal. You don't get that same thing in The Abominable Dr. Fives. That should have been a moment like that. But it's almost as if they took the legs out from under it, you know, or, you know, I don't know if I'm saying the right, you know, saying here, but you know what I mean? Cut the legs out from under it, because it just didn't have that power. When I think back on this movie, that's not what I remember about it, but it should be. It should be one of the big images that you remember from the movie.
Yeah, because the poster art, everything about this movie shows him disfigured like that. And I almost feel like, Doc, like you're saying, it just didn't have that punch. And I almost feel like they didn't even need to do it. I mean...
Yeah, it didn't add anything to the movie. I agree with you. I thought it was just kind of like, oh, well, that's interesting. You know, that's what he really looks like. Yeah, it's kind of nasty. But that's it. I mean, they didn't take it any further than that. It would have been maybe even better if he revealed it to one of his victims, but he doesn't do that, you know? So, yeah, I agree. I don't think it was handled as well as it could have been.
I totally agree. And nothing that would, not really a negative, but that would be the one thing that I don't know why it wasn't effective for me. But,
right. No, it wasn't for me either. It really wasn't. Mm-mm.
But the movie overall, man, just a great movie and thoroughly enjoy it. Is there anything else you want to add to this one, Doc?
No, I think we've covered it.
All right. Well, I think I'll come in with my rating. I'm going to give this 7.2 on IMDb. I'm going to give this a solid, man, 8.5. This is a really, really outstanding film that I couldn't recommend to enough. Although, keep in mind, this is your Hammer-esque theatrical film, so it's not for everybody. If you are a straight-up gore hound, if you're the hardcore horror fans, you know, I don't think this is the movie for you. But if you know Vincent Price and you dig Vincent Price films, this is definitely one that you should watch. Going in mind thinking maybe Phantom of the Paradise or that style film, you know, that's what you're getting.
If you look forward to like a double feature of Martyrs and Inside,
yeah,
this may not be the movie for you.
This may be the movie you want to watch in between those to give your heart a break.
Yeah, there you go.
But where you come in, Doc, for this one?
You know, I had the same exact one. You 8.5. Mm-hmm. I think that's perfect for this. And yeah, I really do rank it as one of my favorite Vincent Price performances. And just such a fun movie. It really is. It's so entertaining. It is very theatrical, yes, and just all of the kill scenes are really cool. And you get quite a few of them in this movie.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which is nice. You know, he's nine of them. He's going after nine people, so you get to see them all, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, and I like the fact that not only did you get to kind of see him, even though there were brief moments, but you never knew how he was going to pull it off.
True. No, you didn't. Every single one was a surprise.
It was. And I liked that. I liked that element of while I'm watching it, I'm on the edge of the seat thinking, there's no way he's going to pull this death off.
Right.
Because they're in like police protection. How is he going to do this in a hospital? How is he? And boom, does it.
Yes, he always finds a way.
He does. So it's a great movie, man. And definitely get it. Check it out for sure. You'll definitely enjoy it. So I think without further ado, we'll go into our last review of this episode, and then we'll close her out here. But it's 1971's Simon, King of the Witches. And this was directed by Bruce Kessler. And we'll play the trailer, and I'll come back with the plot.
Simon, King of the Witches, starring Andrew Prime.
It's my office to warn you of extreme danger.
The weird story of a modern-day warlock, a male witch, an evil spirit.
This isn't a human sacrifice, is it?
A totally new kind of movie experience. A new kind of high.
Moloch reverse.
Never have you seen anyone quite like Simon.
I'll open this mirror at 1:33. The precise moment in time when the gods are unable to resist my thrust into their domain.
Charge! Charge! Charge!
Simon, King of the Witches, is that once-in-a-lifetime film about witchcraft, black mass, witches' covens, curses, and incantations. About a man who curses the whole establishment when it turns against him, who then in turn destroys him.
Appear and reign for her.
The evil spirit must choose evil.
Go. Go.
You gotta do something, man. Everything's going wrong, man.
Oh, dear, gods on high. Though you push me down 1,000 times, I'll climb back up.
All right, so what is Simon, King of the Witches? IMDb says it is Simon, a young man with magic power, invokes the help of the evil forces in order to take revenge of a man who cheated him with a bad check. Yeah, I guess you could say that. But this is just a straight-up 70s hippie witch slash magician style film where this is a very trippy psychedelic movie. Definitely LSD era. This is like Pink Floyd The Wall video style movie, man.
This is out there. There's no doubt that this movie's out there. But the star of it, I think, Andrew Prime,
yes,
did a really good job. I mean, the first thing we see of him is him walking toward the camera, and yes, it's sort of raining out. And I think, you know, he says, my name is Simon. I live in a storm drain or whatever. And when it rains, most people stay in. I go out.
Loved it. Set the tone just, right there.
Yes. And it's, but what's really kind of interesting about the movie is you see him. At first you think, you know, when he goes over to this party, he meets this young guy in jail. He ends up getting arrested for vagrancy. meets this young guy in jail, and they end up getting released at the same time, and the young guy introduces him to this guy, Hercules, sort of a socialite, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He throws these parties, and everybody goes to these parties that Hercules throws, and you get the feeling Simon's sort of he might just sort of be a con artist here. He's just trying to sell this stuff. Like, he's trying to sell trinkets as magical items and things like that. Mm-hmm. But then as the movie goes on, you're like, wow, this guy, he's got some pretty scary powers here.
Right. Yeah, he can manipulate, like, lights outside and just all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. I think, and again, there is comedy in this. There's no doubt about it. And I think one of my favorite scenes is when he actually goes to a coven.
Oh yeah,
and he's watching these witches, and then he ends up realizing, saying, "This is bullshit.
Bogus, what they're doing here? You know,
it doesn't make any sense what they're doing." Then he holds up the broom. Here it is, ride it. You know, taunting him to ride the broom. You know,
but that was a great scene because that was the one moment of nudity in this movie that was okay.
Oh yeah,
even though I didn't need to see like the grandma out there dancing her ass around.
Well, yeah, that wasn't so good. Oh, Brenda Scott had a couple too, and she was actually married to, no, I think Andrew Prine. You looked him up on IMDb.
Yes,
you know, and Brenda Scott and Andrew Prine were divorced by this point, but it looked like they would remarry two more times.
Right.
They tried. They went down the aisle three times together.
Crazy. Dude, if you can't do it the first time, don't do it the second.
Yeah, right, exactly. But no, you're right. And it did have that. And the kid Turk, he's even like looking around and he sees this nude lady laying on a table.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sort of looking her over, and he goes to touch her, and she goes, "Don't touch me! I'm a religious sacrifice or something like that." But then the next time we see the man, he's naked.
Yeah, so you know he's been banging.
I guess he was able to talk her into something.
Dude, he was a straight up playboy. He would fuck anything that walked.
Oh yeah.
there was even the time when he came with the burn or the itch, and you know what they were relating to.
Well, he had the erection.
Yes.
That's what he had. He had an erection and wouldn't go away. Simon says, "Oh, I have something for that." And he ties something around, and he also pulls out a knife.
Uh-huh.
And this guy's like, so the fear of that is what made it eventually go down. I was like, hey, it worked.
Oh, God, man, this movie. And I cannot not say Andrew Pine without saying this for, you know, Double H's love affair of Grizzly. Yeah, he was in Grizzly. And I can't not mention Grizzly when I say Andrew Pine, or he would butcher me.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, he's a very good actor.
Mm-hmm.
Because he not only does he do really well in this, and he did very well in Grizzly. I remember him in a movie called The Centerfold Girls, where he's this killer, and he did an excellent job in that as well.
Nice.
So he's just a good actor, and I think they were looking at other people, you know, for this part, the director originally, but you know, he kind of always wanted Andrew Prine, and it turned out he was the right man for it. He really was.
Yeah, absolutely, and. The cast overall, I mean, there again, you're not getting great acting in this movie. This is just a weird movie, and it is, once again, like I said, it's a trippy movie. You could definitely tell they were in that era of you know, the drugs and the free love. This is that movie.
Oh,
this,
yeah.
If any movie, you know, represented a decade, this represented that decade of LSD and pot smokers.
Yes, this is sort of, even though it's after Woodstock, it's mm-hmm. kind of the Woodstock thing going on here. Yeah, there's no doubt. But then it does, but then he's able to do some pretty awful things.
Yeah.
You know, he really does with his spells and incantations and everything. He can do a lot of damage.
Yeah, because it was funny that the helper kid that was always with him, he would constantly get into trouble or something would happen. He'd be like, "Well, you put a curse on him."
Yes,
he was
exactly.
Always put a curse on him. And yes. I loved that element. I loved that dynamic between the two, even though the boy was not that great of an actor.
No.
But he didn't need to be. This is a 70s exploit movie, man. I mean, you don't go into it. This is that drive house, drive-in grindhouse feel film that
yes.
you're not looking for Oscars or Emmys or anything like that. You're just looking for fun.
Exactly. And Andrew Prime was working on a different level, I think, than most of the other actors.
Oh, you could totally tell.
In this movie.
Totally, I mean that.
Yeah.
And one thing that did, was it a bad, good thing? It was kind of in between. But I've got to tell, the whole special effects of this, you know, when I was saying the trippy, there was one moment that he basically steps through a mirror, and they do this whole few minutes of like Tron-esque.
Well, it was 2000. The people who helped put that together worked on that final segment in 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Nice.
So with all of that sort of trippy stuff, yes. And they also helped with the end of this movie. And you can see some similarities in what they're doing. But, yeah. Now, that was...
I mean, it was like looking through a kaleidoscope. It was all kinds of weird colors. And just, like I said, if you were, you know, smoking dope or if you was on some pills or LSD, this movie would have had you just in another dimension.
Oh, it would have messed with your mind big time. There's no doubt.
You'd have been staring at the walls going, oh.
Yes.
But I liked that. I liked that moment. There was the ridiculous red dot that would come up with that sound.
Oh, yeah. That was the malevolent spirit making an appearance is what it was like. And he always knew how to sort of get rid of it.
Uh-huh.
It never really bothered him. But then it shows up at somebody else, and they are not so skilled at dealing with them, you know?
No, not at all. And it's just God, man, what else can you say about this movie? So this is freaking weird.
Yes.
It was showing that screenwriter Robert Fippany was an actual practicing warlock.
Yes, I have this on DVD, and I was finally able to watch. I hadn't seen the DVD before, and they're talking to Andrew Prine. Some of the women in that coven scene were actual witches.
Nice.
And they invited him over to their house for what they said was like a happening or something.
Uh-huh.
And the writer looked at him and said, "Don't go."
Huh.
They're trying to steal your energy from you, or that they know that, you know, everything, all the good luck you've had, they're trying to steal that for themselves. And Andrew Prine is originally like, "Yeah, I don't buy any of that stuff," you know. Then he thought about it for a minute and goes, "Yeah, you know what, things are going pretty good for me here. I don't think I'll go to the happen." So he never went.
Might have been a good thing.
Right.
Oh my God, I love that scene. But they said that Andrew Prine actually kept his sorcerer's robe that he wears in the film.
Oh, nice.
That'd be pretty cool. I'm sure he's still got it sitting up. I mean, dude, this guy has acted all the way up to Lords of Salem that came, Rob Zombie's Lords of Salem.
Exactly.
Still relevant in the acting world, man. What a freaking gigantic, iconic, kind of cool dude.
Yeah, he's one of those ones that you never, you know what it is? You look at his face, you say, "Yeah, I've seen the face before," but it's that voice.
Yes.
That voice, when you hear it, because it's been in so many television shows, and there's one of them, it's bound to strike a nerve with you as you hear him talk. You're like, "I've heard this guy's voice," almost you want to say, like, many times before, without being able to really, because this is what happened to me anyway. Maybe it's just me, but I know I'm looking, I have heard that voice before, and I don't know where the hell I've heard it before. But it was TV. It was something on TV, and he did a lot of TV. I mean, you look at his credits, there's a lot of television in there.
All the way back to Alfred Hitchcock, man. I mean, he's been on a lot of stuff. Even Freddy's Nightmares. He was on an episode of Freddy's Nightmares.
Oh, wow, nice.
So that's really cool. And he does have that unique voice. And, you know, as an actor, especially in this era of where he was coming up, there was a buttload of actors in the 70s and 80s, man. You had to have something to stand out, and his voice definitely did that.
Absolutely.
Almost Casey Kasem-esque.
Right, exactly. He was, and that's what really, I think, shows what kind of an actor he is.
Yeah.
That he was able to get that voice and sort of control it the way that he did and have it be, even when he disappears into a character, you still know it's him from movie to movie.
Right.
You know, from that voice. And I had that same experience watching the Centerfold Girls. He doesn't even talk as much in that one as he does in Simon, King of the Witches. Nice. But I still had that experience, like, I know I've heard this guy's voice somewhere before, and it was on television, and man, whatever it was, it stuck with me. All except for the title.
Yeah.
I remember the experience. I just don't remember the title.
Production on this one, it said that the misleading advertising of this movie was set up. Simon as a satanic sex orgy film. They were cashing in on the Charles Manson trials that was taking place. Well, obviously, you know, this movie wasn't about that, even though they were trying to push it. They said it
broke the
box office for sure. Because it is a bloodless film, as they're saying here on Wikipedia. There is no blood in this film.
No.
There is not a lot of murder-esque. It's just a weird, trippy movie. Says only brief nudity, which I will say there was quite a bit of nudity once you got to the orgy part. Sexual part of it. And I love witch movies. Jesse and I are huge, huge witch fans. And
absolutely.
Not that I'm a practicing witch, or am I? But I love that whole era and that aura of it. And I love movies that revolve around it. So anytime I see witch in a movie title, I'm trying to get my hands on it and check it out. And I felt like they did keep this to a aspect of a witch movie. Sometimes there's movies that has the witch in it, has nothing to do with it, but this one did, even though that he kept continually calling himself a magician.
Yes.
It's still the witch element, and then that, of course, the whole ritual and thing that was going on, even though it was bogus, but, you know, I just loved it. I loved that part of this movie.
Oh, absolutely. Me too. I think there were a lot of interesting... What it was is that even though nothing earth-shattering was happening most of the time, it was just sort of, you know, but there was just something about it, you know? It pulled you in. It's not something that, you know, like you're saying, it's not gory. It's not incredibly scary. As a matter of fact, they didn't even, Andrew Prine and the director didn't even view it as a horror movie initially. Then it was like a thriller type of film.
Yeah.
But there's always something happening, and you want to watch. You want to see where it's going to go because of what this guy can do, and because he's so magnetic. He's so charismatic.
Yes.
That you want to see what he's going to do.
I loved, and with you saying that, was toward the end of the movie, he was always trying to get enough magnetic energy together to basically charge this bar, and this was to teleport him into another dimension, which he eventually does. But it was funny because at the end of this movie, and I'm talking the ending, Doc. I'm talking when it finally was all said and done. I was satisfied with the ending of this movie. I was like, okay, they wrapped us up in a nice little bow. I liked where they went at the ending of it, and I dug that whole scenario. And overall, I mean, I thought the script was good. And that was something I was going to mention. They were talking about over here that it said what set Simon King of the Witches apart from the legion of occult genre films of the 60s, 70s is the script. And I will say I agree with him. It was literate. It was versed, as they were mentioning.
Yeah.
And they were both twist, and they were poking fun at the cliches. And I've got to agree with what they're saying there, because like you said, when the movie begins with Simon walking in the rain, reciting a monologue, you know, spouting off that he's a powerful warlock, after which he's immediately busted for vagrancy.
Right.
You know, it was one thing after another like that. You know, when he lost his little dagger and the different things that went on. You know, here's this great magician, this great warlock, and then this happens. And so the cleverness of the script was so well done. And it's not, there again, a great movie. It's not the well-acted movie, but it had me intrigued. And, I mean, for IMDb, they've got it at a 6 rating, which is really good, honestly. for a film that I had never heard of, Doc. I had not until looking through 71, and you mentioned this one. We decided on this one. I was like, cool, I really want to see this because I'd never heard of it.
Oh, yeah. Yep, absolutely.
And I've seen it now, and I'm not displeased that I haven't or that I have seen it. And there was a 2008, I got to look this up. I think they said there was a release of 2008 DVD of this one, which I think you've got, Doc. Or you've got, you said you had the DVD of this one, correct?
I do have the DVD, but it's the Dark Sky. Yeah, Dark Sky.
Okay. Yes. So I'm really intrigued and definitely want to get it because I watched this one. You can watch it for free on YouTube. It's not very good transfer whatsoever on if you watch it on YouTube. Really poor quality to the point I don't know how the DVD looked, but there's scenes where it kind of looked like the whole background of the movie was kind of twisting back and forth at you. So it was some real funky shit going on during it. That threw me off.
Oh yeah, and the movie does have I'm not going to say it does have a rough edge to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because it is low budget.
Mm-hmm.
So and they you can tell they kind of filmed it on the fly, filmed it in some locations, you know. So, but it worked for this. I think that look worked for what they were going for.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, great. Not great, but great feel of a film. And if you're looking for a witch film, a movie that revolves kind of like the witch elements of the movies when you're getting into like The Craft and different movies like that, this is a really good one to check out. As far as warlock-style witch films, I think the original Warlock, or the, I don't know if it's original, but to me it's the original, the Warlock movie, with Julian Sands. I think that one will always be my favorite that revolves around the male dominant witch.
Right.
That movie's hands down my favorite.
It's a good one.
It is when it comes to that element of movies. But this one's definitely, I'm going to put it on the radar, listeners, for you to check out. Simon, King of the Witches. Don't be thrown off by the goofy name. Really decent film. Right. Not great acting in that, but still just a really cool film, man. I couldn't recommend it enough. Not bloody. Does have some nudity. So, yeah, it's one of those movies, Doc. Anything you got to add on this one?
I think we covered it again.
All right. So, for me, I mean, IMDb gave it a 6 rating. I'm going to be a little bit above that. I'm going to give this one a 6.5 and say check it out. I don't know about the DVD purchase as far as how much it is. Once again, you can watch it on YouTube, but I do dare tell you to be forewarned, it's not great quality, so you're not going to be able to watch a crisp movie. But if you do want to check it out, it is on YouTube, and you can check it there. But how about you, Doc, for Simon, King of the Witches?
You know, I'll give it a 7.5.
Okay.
And I definitely think I would recommend it. You know, it's one of those movies. Again, not the scariest film you're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at all of the movies from 1971, I think you could say that for a lot of them.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but for a lot of them.
Yeah.
That it was just that this is the type of film that was, you know, this was that era.
Yeah.
The type of film that was coming out in that era. And Simon, King of the Witches fits in that really well.
It does, because other than, you know, I Drink Your Blood or something like that.
I Drink Your Blood is on another level. You're right. That one I would put up there.
That was that precursor taste of what you were going to get later on in the 70s.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
This was that, hold on, this is what's fixing to happen. Yeah.
Right. Like the ahead of its time.
Yes. But overall, I mean, you're right, 70s. So far in 1970, 71, what we have seen is a lot of vampire films, a lot of theatrical movies, a lot of staged play-style movies. So, you know, once you start getting into 74, 75, getting into that period, then you start getting a little bit more of the hardcore and you start seeing that kind of twist and turn into the slashers. You're starting to get into the gorier side of horror movies. And you start seeing that really around 74, 75, and then it really starts amping up. So I'm excited that we're doing this whole decade, Doc, because we're going to be able to watch that gradual change in taste of movies, Doc. And this is awesome that we're in the early stages of it right now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is the start, and just looking at what we're going to, you know, what's coming up in 1972. I mean, even there, you're looking at some interesting movies.
I can't wait.
I mean, and some that are, you know, a little out there, like Blood Orgy of the She Devils.
Oh God!
You know, things like that. But it's still. Yeah, I mean, you're right. We're going to kind of see how this whole thing sort of evolved. And obviously, we're getting close to Chainsaw.
Yeah.
Getting close to Chainsaw Massacre.
You're getting Chainsaw, but 72, I mean, you're getting Last House on the Left.
Yeah, right.
You're getting a little, really, and I'm just precursoring a little bit things here, man. Telly Savalas' Horror Express. Oh, man. Yeah. Dude, Tales from the Crypt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a good one.
Blackula, dude.
Blackula is one of those movies that when you hear the title, you think, oh, that's
going to be shit.
Goofy. It's going to be goofy as hell. That is an intense vampire movie.
Mm-hmm.
You think it's going to be comedic with a title like Blackula. You really do. You think this is going to be a comedy. There is no comedy. This is not a comedy at all. This is straight up vampire horror in Blackula, which is what really sort of impressed me.
Right.
You know, because you expect it to be one thing, and it turns out to be something completely other, and some definitely creepy scenes in that one.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm looking over some of these. So let us know, listeners. Comment. Send us Facebook, Twitter, whatever. Get in touch with myself. Get in touch with Doc. What do you want us to review in 1972, man? I'm telling you, I'm looking through here, Doc, with movies like Tower of Evil, The Grave of the Vampire, Barren Blood, Asylum, man, Night of Lepus. Oh, God, we did that on...
Planet Macabre.
Planet Macabre.
And there's another one on here now. This became Zot. I think it was also Zot, with the Blood Waters of Dr. Z.
Oh, wow.
Okay, now we have, I have Mystery Science Theater 3000 collections.
Uh-huh.
Me and my son were watching them. Well, I popped on the Blood Waters of Dr. Z. I fell asleep. Okay, because, like, this movie, I didn't make it. I was already getting tired when we watched the last one, and my son wanted to start another one up, so we started up Blood Waters of Dr. Z. I fell asleep. When I woke up, my son said, "That is the worst movie I've ever seen in my life." Like, he wasn't even talking about the Mystery Science Theater 3000. He said they couldn't even help it. Because goes, "That was the worst movie I've ever seen in my life." And I think it's also called Zot, if I'm not mistaken.
Zot.
Yeah, it is. It's called Zot, Z-A-A-T.
Uh-huh.
But it's also the Blood Waters of Dr. Z. And according to my oldest son, It is for him the worst movie ever made.
Wow. So listeners, let us know. I mean, movies such as Invasion of the Blood Farmers, The Gore Girls, H.G. Lewis. There are some really good ones in here that I know of, and there is some really bad ones. Do you want us to review bad ones? Do you want us to review some good ones? I mean, let us know. Comment, Facebook us, Twitter us, hit me up, hit Doc up. Whatever.
Oh, frogs.
Yes. Frogs, dude.
Frogs.
Frogs. Which I'm going to be a little honest. That's probably going to be one that I'm going to lean for. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what you listeners want. But Blood Freak. I mean, God bless. 72, man, has some really crawlspace.
We get Lucio Fulci's entry into the giallo with Don't Torture a Duckling.
Yes, which is a really decent one. We just reviewed it not recently. Super Beast, Something Evil, The Rats Are Coming, nice. Three on a Meat Hook.
The Man from Deep River, the first cannibal.
Yes.
Italian cannibal movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, see, listeners, let us know, because I'm going to talk with Doc off air, and we're going to kind of lean towards some movies, but let us know what you want us to review, because there are some pretty big heavy hitters in here. Ben, the rap movie, which is kind of Willard-esque. So, yeah, there's some films in here that could definitely warrant some reviews, man. But, God, how do we choose two, Doc?
I know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
Man, I'm excited. But
how about, I don't think one we're going to pick, but it's called The Rats Are Coming, The Werewolves Are Here. That's the full title. The Rats Are Coming, ! The Werewolves Are Here, !
And it's probably about birds or something, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, listeners, let us know for sure. Our next episode will possibly be our Italian horror. If I can get Dr. Dirty back on, we're going to be still looking at Zombie Lake and can't even remember the other one now. Let me look back in my notes. I'll have to rewatch them for the third time now since I've a couple weeks off here, but we were doing
I feel bad for you having to watch Zombie Lake several times.
Zombie Lake and God Bless America. What was the other? Oasis of the Zombies. Zombie Lake and Oasis of the Zombies.
Yes.
So that will possibly
Oasis of the Zombies is, well, I won't get into it. I'll wait to hear you guys show before I offer an opinion on either of those.
Well, that will possibly be next episode. If not, we're going to be back into our new flicks, and we'll pick a couple newer flicks to review. Let me know about Get Out, listeners. Do you want a review of Get Out? Is it too new to push it, or do you want to push it, listeners? Let us know, because I know Jesse has seen it. I've seen it. Doc, you've seen it.
Yeah.
Maybe one that we might do for the next episode if you think it's not too soon, listeners, you know, being it's still in the theater. Because sometimes we do not necessarily get spoiler-esque, but, you know, sometimes we reveal a little bit more than, you know, you may want to hear about before it's in the theater kind of deal. So, yeah, we might do it anyways, Doc. Fuck it.
Yeah, there you go. Right, why not?
I definitely want to talk about it, so we'll see. So, there you go, listeners. We're going to end it now. I'm rambling, man. It's time to get Doc out of here. He's got things to do. And I got things to do, like sleep. And
yeah, me too. That's what I got to do, too.
Yeah, Doc's got to go to work early in the morning, listeners. So I'm going to let him do his final outro. I'll do mine, and we'll be out of here. So, Doc, take it away, buddy.
All right. Well, come over to check DVD Infatuation. Still going over there. At DVD Infatuation on Twitter. I do have a Facebook page as well, and I am also on the Horror Movie Podcast with Jay of the Dead, who we send out all our best wishes to him. It is the speedy recovery, and of course Wolfman Josh. And I'm also on the Universal Monster Cast, which is a new podcast that Josh and I are putting together, along with Joel Robertson. And that one, we're looking at doing Universal movies in anticipation for their new franchise that's coming out. We got the new Mummy movie coming out in May.
Nice. It's going to be a shit movie, maybe not.
It's one of those things. You know, it's one of the, you see the trailer and you're kind of like, you don't know. It's funny because we were talking recently, Josh and I, and the whole idea was like Tom Cruise and Russell Crowe, who are both there, go, no, don't worry, it's going to be scary. Well, you know what? That just doesn't really, it doesn't convince me.
Yeah.
What Tom Cruise and Russell Crowe consider scary.
Yes.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. No, if somebody had say Sid Haig,
mm-hmm.
said, oh no, this is going to be really scary, I might buy it a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, but not so much with Tom Cruise and Russell Crowe. I don't dislike them. I actually really like Tom Cruise, and I like a lot of the movies he's been doing recently. But I don't know that I go to him and say, hey, what's horror? What is this really going to be a horror movie? Come on, convince me. I don't know that I don't know that Tom Cruise just coming out and saying that is going to be enough to convince me.
I totally agree with you. So yeah, man, check it out then, listeners. And we do wish Jay of the Dead the best going through the heart surgery and different things. And hopefully you know, he'll get rejuvenized and reharticized and be back and everything. Man, we love Jay.
Absolutely.
And have known him for quite some time, and he's such a great, genuine, nice guy, and we don't do nothing but wish him the best.
Yeah.
And I know Doc and Wolfman will be holding the reins and everything will be going great, but love him, man. I hope you get better, Jay. We love you, buddy. And for
absolutely.
Me, you can follow me Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Email me, gregamortis666@gmail.com. You can also, of course, YouTube. Once I finally ever, you know, fucking get on there, I'm starting to even get the damn trolls now coming out like, you just fucking gave up on us and you want me to be in an argument and a fight, and I'm not going to fight on there, dude.
Right, right.
I apologize. I just have not physically had the time or the ability to be on YouTube recently. I will get back over there. Just bear with me, listeners. I've been going through some things that just does not allow me to do some certain things. So I will be back. Trust me, listeners, one day soon. So follow us over there. Of course, for Jessie Robbins, we wish her the best. She was going to be on, but had some things come up, but she should be back on the next episode, and hopefully Dr. Dirty as well. So we're going to end this. We'll see you next week, man. It'll either be our Italian horror or we'll go back to the new flicks. We'll see. One way or another, you'll have an episode hopefully Tuesday. So until next time, it's Greg and Mortis, Dr. Shot, Jesse Robbins, Haddonfield Hatchet, Dr. Dirty, and Chantel Fashion, which has been on here, and got about 300,000 other people we've had on here. We'll see you on the flip side. Peace!